All right, thank Riley Grossman for having me. It's an honor actually to be back at Rutgers and to be with RJX. I started out right over here, you know, with you guys and everything.
Sorry about the football team. We tried our best.
What are you going to do, you know? But it's amazing to be back. I studied in Israel for about 2 years at Mokhan Yaakov. I was here also studying with you guys. And tonight I want to talk to you guys about the power of speech. Words can create worlds, alter perspectives, form relationships, change your mind, your day, your life, impact your mood, feelings, hates, wants, desires, love, make you go, or make you tune out. Words can hurt, destroy, tear down, you're fired. Rip apart the edifice of humanity and tear apart everything that makes it go, ugh, and destroy everything that you could ever imagine. Words form the foundation of trust. I do. Or what we rely on to understand one another. I get it now. Grow together, laugh together, build things together, be human together. That must be so hard. Words are the building blocks that we need to become our best selves, to inspire each other, to reach our potential. Words are never inconsequential, and they're the foundation of our world. We use them to praise each other. I'm proud of you. To bless our Creator, Rabotai Nevarech. Reassure one another, you got this. You got this. Words will make the world go round. They're powerful weapons to be wielded either for good or for bad. So I ask you, how are you going to use yours? The power of words, power of speech. If you look throughout the entire Torah, in the first parsha, you see that God created the world with words. Think about it. God made things with speech. Look at it. He says, let there be light. And God said, let there be light. And God said, divide the upper waters from the lower waters. Think about it. He could have done anything. He's God. He could have, you know, blinked, winked, anything. But instead, he spoke. Everything that God made, he made with his words. He could even have just thought, but he didn't. He chose specifically to use words as the vehicle to create worlds. So I want to talk to you guys today a little bit about how we ourselves can use words to build worlds and to build each other, and use some Torah sources to help develop that idea a bit. So one of the first things that we do in our morning prayers is we say, Baruch Shamar V'Haya Olam Baruch Hu. And what's that really mean? Well, it says, blessed is he who spoke and the world came into being. Think about it. The first thing that we thank God for is the fact that he created with speech. We could have thanked him for anything. Why are we thanking him for speech? What's so empowering about speech? What's so important about it? Another idea. The word devar is the Hebrew word for both word and thing. So the physical manifestation of a thing is God's word. So let's take a little bit of this and, you know, peel back a layer of it and understand it a bit deeper. There's a concept in Torah called halacha bedracha, which means to walk in God's ways. Has anybody heard of this concept before? Cool. So halacha bedracha means to walk in God's ways. And you have one word over here, which is halacha, which some of us may know means Jewish law. On the other side, you have holik, which means to go and to walk. The whole idea of halacha, the whole entire reason for it, is so that we can walk towards being a better person, towards becoming our best selves, and by developing each other and ourselves to become our best self. Halacha, to walk in God's ways. So think about it. Out of all the creatures in the entire universe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God made, he made man with the ability to speak. Okay, I understand that all the other animals out there, they could also have their own language, but we speak uniquely in the same way in Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew, the way that God used the Torah and everything else to make the whole world. So with halacha b'dracha, if we're supposed to imitate God and do what he says and to be like God, one of the biggest things we could do to be like God is to create worlds, just like he created worlds. How the heck can we do that? Can a human actually create the worlds that God made? Well, we do. We see it. In Parshas Pekudei, we see Moshe Rabbeinu and Betzalel. Okay, so we know that Moses was the one who went up on Mount Sinai, and he was the one who was able to get all of the Torah. Who the heck is this Betzalel guy? Betzalel was the person who built the entire Mishkan, the portable tabernacle that was going to be in the wilderness, in the desert that we were traveling with. He was there. He was the construction worker, so to speak, but the spiritual construction worker of the actual tabernacle. He built the Mishkan. The Gemara Brachos 55a tells us like this. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu got all of the information that he needed to have Bezalel build the Mishkan. And he told him, he said, you know, Bezalel, I want you to build the Aron. I want you to build the Ark with the, that we're going to have, you know, the tablets, the Luchot in. And I want you to build the table that we're going to have the Lechem Aponimam, the showbreads. And I want you to also build the menorah, all the vessels. Build me all the vessels first, and then afterwards build a house around it. Build all the stuff that you're going to put in your house first, and then build the house around it. So the Gemara of Brachos in 55a says like this. Bezalel politely and gently tells Moshe Rabbeinu, he says to Moses, wait a minute. So I'm going to paraphrase a little bit for a modern era. You want me to take my flat screen TV? You want me to take my couch? You want me to take all of my stuff and assemble that first? And then build my house and put a roof on it? What about rain, animals, what about all this other stuff going on? Are you kidding me? How am I supposed to do that? So he says, Moshe says back to Bezalel, oh my gosh, you must have been Bezalel Kel. You must have been in the shadow of God. Whoa, you knew exactly what I was supposed to know. So I can't tell you that Moses ever said that he was wrong, but the Gemara can tell you that he kind of had to realize his error, and we all have to realize our errors. And he said, no way, I have to build the house around it, and then I can put all my stuff in it. Why? Because that's Minhag HaSheolam. That's the way of the world. That's the way everything happens. Great, so I told you a neat little story. What's that do? What's the point of it? This man, Bezalel, altered the entire course of Jewish history and events. How? Because he told Moshe, maybe you're not right. He didn't challenge him, but he said, you know, I think I heard a little bit differently. The tabernacle, the actual Mishkan, was the spiritual house of everything that the Jewish people went through in the desert. And had that been built wrong, God would never have dwelt here with us. That was the whole point of it, was to be the place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God could be on earth. Imagine, you know, being a real estate agent and you're trying to get real estate for God, you know? You're trying to, like, get a house for him, whatever it is, you want to be the best thing out there. And you kind of didn't do it right. You built the wrong thing. Is he going to really dwell there? No. So words changed everything. If it weren't for Bezalel being the builder, if he didn't actually use his words effectively and properly, he never would have been able to do what he needed to do. His avoda, his purpose would have been out the window, and not only that, the whole course of events of history would have been changed. But because he spoke up, he built a world. He built the spiritual world that Klal Yisrael used while they were traveling in the desert. So we see a very powerful case where words were used to actually alter the physical creation of the house of all things spiritual for the Jewish people. And it's actually funny. Many times we don't even appreciate something until it's like taken away from us, you know? So I'm going to open up a little bit to you. Senior year of high school, my lungs collapsed. I wasn't able to speak. I remember it very, very vividly. It was around Passover time. And around Passover time, what happened was I was sitting around the table with my family, my mother and my father, and for whatever reason, you know, I'm a lawyer, whatever reason, I started arguing with them. And I don't remember even what it was about. I'm sure you guys have arguments or whatever it might be. And I'm eating my matzah brei, it's great, and there I am, talking to my mom and dad. And I get so frustrated by whatever it was that we were arguing about. So I got up, I went to the bathroom, and the next thing I know, it felt like a bowling ball fell out of my chest. I almost doubled over in pain. I couldn't do anything about it. And it hurt. At that moment, I didn't even remember what I was arguing about. My folks had no clue what was flying, and they just were so nervous. So I took a nap. Right after that, we said, maybe we should go to the doctor. We should, like, do something about this. I don't remember if it was that day or the day after, but we went to the doctor, Dr. Igbenuga, who was an amazing man. And, you know, most doctors, they give a diagnosis. They try to tell you, you know, maybe you go, you take this medicine, you do that. Dr. Igbenuga did not do that. His diagnosis, and I quote, was, go to the hospital. Go to the hospital. So senior year of high school, I'm flipping out, super scared, nervous. My lungs, I don't know what's going on, but this bowling ball thing fell out of my chest, but nothing actually fell out. I can't really breathe so well, and I didn't know my lungs collapsed at the time. So there I am, going to the emergency room to be told that my right lung is 50% diminished. Gone. So that's why I can't really breathe so well. The nurses and doctors laughed, but I couldn't breathe. They had to do several surgeries that I'll save you the graphic time and the you know, how detailed it was. They had to reinflate my lung while I was fully conscious, okay, and more or less separate everything out so that they can put it all back together again and build it back again. What happened was that there was a congenital cyst the size of about a grape on my lung, and it ruptured, which is like knifing a tiger. And the air just leaks right out of it. So too by my lung. So hours later, I'm in the emergency room, kind of with it, kind of not there, but not. And my mom comes in and she says, "Bob, are you doing okay? How are you?" And I just want to scream out that I'm in so much pain, but nothing came out. I couldn't speak. I couldn't use my words. And that time was the first moment in my entire life that I thought, whoa, words matter. Not just like, okay, you know what, I have a good conversation with you. I don't want to say any lashon hara or whatever. I don't want to say any evil speech. But like, whoa, I couldn't even speak at all. Not only that, but it happened again. After they reinflated this entire lung and they took care of all of this and did all the surgeries, it happened on the left side. So to go through it a second time, knowing I wasn't going to be able to speak, it empowered me to not only want to go to law school and to be myself and to also grow, but also to like recognize the value of our speech. What are we doing with it? You know, you can have any idea about speech, but like really, when you speak, do you have any idea how many words are coming out of your mouth in like a second? And you could be using them to build yourself. You could be using them for avarice. You could be sinning. You could be doing terrible, terrible things, or you could be using them to help another person. So there's an incredible medrash on this. The medrash is part of the oral law. Has anybody heard of what the medrash is? Perfect. Okay, so perfect. So the medrash is a part of Torah. And there's an incredible medrash that talks about a king and a lioness. And it comes from, if anybody's looking it up, Socher Tov 39, Medrash Tehillim. And it goes like this. And again, I'll ad-lib for the modern day community to make it be more understandable. So it's like this. There was a king. And this king was so sick, he was almost on his deathbed. He had all of his servants come in. He had all of his doctors come in. He had every single person that he knew that could help him come in. And he's there dying. And he says, what do I do? I'm a doctor. I need a doctor to help me. Every one of his doctors came in. So I can't help you. Came out. Slowly but surely, this king is losing all hope. He has no idea what to do whatsoever. And little by little, he's like, oh my gosh, like, what am I going to do? Servant after servant comes in to help him, nothing. Doctor after doctor comes in to help him, nothing. Until one pintle of Jew, one little small doctor, one little sage comes in and he says, I know what can cure you. He says, great, tell me what can cure me, what can cure me? He says, you need the milk of a lioness. Excuse me, what? I need the milk of a what? You need the milk of a lioness. You mean somebody's got to go to a female lion and get the milk? Won't they all die? And isn't it a little dangerous? Like, what are you supposed to do? You need the milk of a lioness. And the sage leaves. That day, the king sends out a proclamation. For everybody in the entire kingdom, I'll give you a reward of 1,000,000, whatever the monetary currency was at the time. Or I'll make you a prince. Whatever it was. It was wealth, riches, everything you could ever want. And what is that? What's it going to do for them? You know, obviously, it's wealth. It would be great. Nobody answers the call. Not a single person comes back to say, okay, I'm in, king. I'm in. No one. Days go by. King gets sicker and sicker and sicker. Almost dies. Until that sage comes back, that little pintle Jewish guy comes back, and he says, by the way, king, I just want to let you know, I also know how to go and get it. I know how to get that lion's milk. He said, what? Why didn't you tell me that to begin with? You know how to get the lioness milk? Great, go and do it. Tell me what to do. He says, all right, I'm going to go and get it for you, and I'll be back in a week. So what does he do? He's a little guy. I'm not such a big guy. Sage is probably about the same body type. I'm going to go stand up to a lion. Okay, maybe it's a female lion, but it's a lion. What are you going to do? So this is what the sage does. He goes back home, and he gets steaks. Not like steaks like to stab somebody, but actual steaks, like, you know, meat steaks. And he knows exactly where to go. He knows exactly where the right cave is to find the lion. And there he goes. Takes one steak, first day. And he's probably scared out of his mind. Like, could you imagine, like, going up to a lion to feed it? But this is what this man does. And Medrash brings down that he goes the first day. And there he is, right near the cave. And he just hurls it on in there. He just chucks the steak right in there and then runs. Doesn't even hear anything other than the pouncing of the lioness on the steak, and he knows, at least, okay, at least it ate it, you know. Second day, it comes back. This time, again, with another steak, and it comes a little closer. He comes right up to the lip of the cave, and you can even see, you know how in those cartoons they have, like, everything all pitch black, but you can see the eyes? He's able to see the eyes, and tosses the steak in. The lioness pounces, and he bolts, and he runs, and he's out of there quicker than he even got there in the first place. Third day, fourth day, fifth day, and it just gets closer and closer and closer each day with a new stake until this line is just like clockwork knows. This person's coming to feed me. Great. And slowly but surely, the man's fear disappears, and the lion is like, great, I'm going to get fed. Until the second to last day, he's there with one stake. He's in the cave now, and basically just drops it right in front of her. And he pets her head, and instead of running, he walks out. Last day, seventh day. Has the stake, comes inside the cave, literally right up to her, hands it to her. And before you can even know it, he's there with a little flask, right underneath, and I'll be darned, he got the moon. And he put the cap on it and didn't even run out. The lioness was already basically his friend at that point. And he's like overjoyed, flipping out, I got the milk, I'm going to be able to help the king. And he's running. He's running all the way back to the king. And then he says, you know what, I'm a little tired. I'm going to take a nap. I have to take a nap. If I don't take a nap, like, I'm never going to make it back. I mean, it's a pretty long journey back over there. I got the milk. Like, I could at least, you know, check out for a little bit. So takes a nap. You might think, okay, somebody's going to steal the milk. He doesn't steal the milk. It's like this. He dreams. He takes a nap and he dreams. And all of the different parts of his body are talking. As, you know, anything can happen in a dream. The feet say, oh, I'm the king. Had it not been for me, we would never have gotten here in the first place. The hands, they pipe in and say, what are you talking about? Had it not been for me, we would never have gotten the milk in the first place. How are you going to hold those stakes? Yeah, what are you going to do? And the mind speaks up and says, wait a minute. Had it not been for my grand plan, nothing would have happened. Are you kidding me? Hello, Rabosai, the mind's where it's at. And the mouth pops up. The mouth says like this. He says, gentlemen, I'm the real king. And tomorrow you're going to find out why. And the man wakes up, dreams over, rolls over. He's like, that's kind of a little weird of a dream. I'm going to go back to the king now and give him his lioness milk so I can be cured. And everything, okay. He gets to the king. He's so excited, so delighted. He's pumped. And it's the following day, just like the mouth said. And he goes up to the king and he says, king, guess what? You'll never believe it. I got you the milk of a dog. And all the body parts inside of him were like, what are you doing, mouth? Like, it's the lioness milk. Don't mess with the king. He's the king. He could kill you. Like, don't blow it. And the king says, what did you get me? I have a million dogs here. This is back in the day. I have a million dogs around here. I could have had any one of my, anybody's, you know, go and milk a female dog to get me some milk. What did you get me? And he says, I got you the milk of a dog. It's what you needed. King says, string him up. We're going to kill him. Kill him. All the guards come right in. They rush in. They're about to kill the man. They're about to kill this sage. And the mouth is all like, ah, I told you I'm the real boss. And all the body parts inside are like, what are you doing, mouth? Are you kidding me? Say something. So eventually he says this. The mouth opens up and he says, king, by the way, I just wanted to let you know, it's lioness milk. But for me, it was so easy for me to be able to get you that milk. It was as if I had any one of your servants milk a dog. And the king was like, oh, when you say it like that, of course, it just makes total sense to me. Like, oh, I got it. They unstring him. Everything's perfect. Everything's great. And the Medrash ends like this. Death and life are in the hands of the tongue. Death and life are in the hands of the tongue. Not the mind, the tongue. So believe it or not, our speech has the power to build worlds, build one another, and can actually destroy and create death. This week's Parsha is Parsha's Toldos. In this week's Parsha, we learned about Esav. And we also learned about Yaakov. Jacob dwelled in tents, and he was also the type of person that was, you know, learning. And then you have Esav. You have Esau. He was a hunter. And what does this week's Parsha say about Esav? He says that he was tzayd bepiv. What's that mean? Is he trapped with his mouth? What the heck does tzayd bepiv mean? So Rashi on the spot, he says, what's tzayd bepiv? You just told me he's a hunter. It means that he traps with his mouth. What does it mean to trap with your mouth? It means that Esav was a Rasha. He was an evil person. But he wanted everybody to think that he was so kosher so that he would even try to fool his father into thinking that he was so holy. How would he do this? He would try to use, you know, anything, really. He would even say, you know, Abba, how do I tithe salt and straw? Things that obviously don't need to be tithed. What do I do? How do I do that? So So really, at the end of the day, we understand that you can use words totally destructively, like the tongue did in the Midrash. And then you see that the tongue is the winner at the end of the day also, when he does it right. You see what Esau did to fool his own father in order for what? Not much. And we know from the Derech Hashem, if anybody, the way of God, Derech Hashem is another sefer that says like this: more mitzvahs we do bring us closer and closer to God. The more aveiras and sins we do, the further and further away we get from God. And there's an idea of bringing light into the world and being something that's like Maor, something that's going to illuminate and lighten the entire world, which brings you closer to God. So imagine this. You have Esav, who is not only sinning, committing aveiras, killing people, but he's also now lying to his father. He's getting further and further and further and further away from God, destroying worlds. So too by us, when we unthinkingly, in the Broward Commons or wherever we might be at Rutgers, no matter what, on a bus, whatever it is, just, hey bro, what's going on, how are you? Whatever it might be, our words can be destructive. Our words can build. They can do whatever they can, but they're in your control. So I don't want to talk too much about Lashon Hara, but at the end of the day, you realize that destructive speech is the very thing that killed our holy temple. They say, Sinas Chinam is baseless hatred. But it also came from Lashon Hara. It also came from things that are ultimately destructive at the end of the day. And so you guys have a choice. Am I going to, when I have a daily interaction with a friend in class, when I have a daily interaction with my girlfriend, when I have a daily interaction with a teacher, am I going to use Esav words? Or am I going to use holy godlike words? It's important to realize a few other things also. Torah is supposed to be learned verbally. When we speak it out, not only do we get it clearer for ourselves, we bring more holiness into the world through our speech. Like we said earlier, God created with speech. So how amazing is it to recite Torah over with speech? Not only that, but think about how we got the Torah in the first place. Did God just hand us a book and say, here's the Torah, fellas, go read it? No. He got Moses up on the mountain. Moses went all the way out to Mount Sinai and had a chavrusa, like a partnership, a one-on-one with God. Verbally. He's God. And this is Moses. Really, God? You're going to spend that much time? Yeah. He is, because he's God. And he's Moses, and he needs to transmit it orally to all the people, because words are powerful. He could have done some Matrix-like download, for anybody who remembers that movie back from 1999, I Know Kung Fu. Just download it right into Moses and download it into all of Kalayasil. No. It has to be done with words. Okay, great. So really, at the end of the day, we know that our words are extremely powerful. How is all of this encapsulated? For anybody who goes to Shabbos and is there for services in the morning or on Thursday or Monday even, you see, v'zod ha-Torah asher asa Moshe, when you're lifting up the Torah, right? And at the end, what does it say? Al-pi v'ad Moshe, right? Al-pi Hashem v'ad Moshe. Meaning that the Torah was what? It was given over orally to God through God's mouth. So we see, great Bob, okay. We now have all these Torah sources, all these Torah proofs here, at the end of the day, for what's hugely influential in terms of speech from a Torah perspective. But like, great, you could have just said, Bob, like, don't say Lashon Hara, don't do bad speech. Like, what do I get away out of it now? I gave up my night to come out and hear some dude speak. I don't know who you are, but you're up in front of here. What are you going to teach me? What can I take away from tonight in two real practical ways? So first and foremost, our words have the power to create worlds. We can partner with God and walk in his ways by using positive speech to build, to avoid destructive speech. And like I said, are we using godly words or are we using Esav words? How are we speaking? And second, words come out of our mouth so fast, rapid fire style, that we don't even take the time to slow down. Slow down. How are we using our speech? What are we doing? Are we going to build our own personal mishkan inside of ourselves improperly or properly? What are we going to do? How are our words affecting us? It's huge. So for the rest of the time that we have, I want to actually get a little bit more discussion-oriented, because I know what it could be sometimes to have a speaker. You know, I want to hopefully, if you guys are up for it, have some participation and involvement a little bit for those who are up for that. So there's an idea called a SMART goal. Hands up if you've heard of SMARTGoals. Awesome. So like this, a SMART goal stands for specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. What I'd like to do is I'm always about practical. It's nice to have tons of Torah sources. It's nice to be able to put them all together into a nice thing. But what am I going to do with it? The goal that I want everybody out of here tonight, if they can, is to come up with one or two goals of how, in your daily life, you can use speech properly or avoid using speech negatively. How can I build with my speech? How can I create with my speech? So SMART goal is a goal that has to be specific. It can't be like, I'm not going to say Lashon Hara. Or, you know what, I'm going to say hi to a person on the street who's looking like he's having a bad day. It has to be a specific goal. It has to be measurable also. Measurable means I have goalposts. In a game of football, I know when I cross that end zone, I got my 7 points or 6 points and then the field goal kick. Right? So it has to be measurable. I'm going to do it how many times? It has to also be, what was A? Anybody remember what A was? Nice. You have to be able to attain it. If you don't attain it, then you're not going to feel good about it at all. You're not going to be able to do anything with it. Realistic. Realistic means actually I have to be able to do it, right? Attainable means there's goalposts that I can achieve. But realistic, am I trying to set a goal of like, you know, every single day I'm going to wrap tefillin with kavana every single time I remember exactly what I'm supposed to do? Or maybe just, let me wrap tefillin today. You know, is that more realistic? Maybe I can't even wrap it every day. But you know, I'm going to try. That's realistic. So think about it. If we just realize what our words do, well, no, maybe just saying hi on the street to somebody. I'm going to say hi on the street to a person who looks like he had a terrible day once a week for 3 weeks. SMART goal. Or every time that I say Baruch Shamar, if I am praying, I'm going to try to have in mind that, you know what? Baruch Shamar, God created the whole world. And that's like the metaphor for life. God made the whole world with words. So what can I do right now to help others? What can I do? So take a couple of minutes, just thinking in your head. And if anybody's willing, hopefully we could go around and we can, you know, talk it out and have a little discussion about what our goals are and see what we can do to help build the world, improve each other, and improve society generally. And just a reminder, SMART goals mean specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. So I'll give you guys about 2 to 3 minutes to just come up with stuff, and I'll step off to the side, and you guys can come and let me know what you think.
If
you have questions, whatever.
Something that I tried doing every day, but failed at it, but try to do it most days, is that me and some of the other guys in my house will try to learn like one halacha, like usually before I go to sleep, and then it usually gets into like a conversation afterwards.
Awesome.
And I think everybody liked it. So hopefully maybe try to do that at least once a week.
Nice. So let's for the next 2-3 minutes take some time to make a SMART goal if we can about speech specifically. Like what can we do now in order to build each other up, in order to help other people with all these Torah sources, right? How can I now, as a person, relate to myself and others in a big, beautiful way? What can I do to improve the world with speech specifically, based on what everything is saying? So take 2-3 minutes, we're all coming back. Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time bound. Make sure that it's within a time frame.
Related to speech though, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You got mine.
Anybody else have? Anybody have one yet?
Whoever grows, we should go.
All right, Rabbi, you're up first.
Grandmother on Monday morning for 5 minutes.
What was it?
call my grandmother weekly on Monday mornings for 5 minutes.
That's huge, right?
Yeah. I'll be a big.
Nice.
How long?
5 minutes. She's not a big talker, but it's easy. She's got to make sure to do it.
Right. Sometimes
the
goal.
Week, you know, I mean, like brighten up her week.
Right. Sometimes the goal could be so easy, but yet it's so hard for us to do because we get so busy with everything. We're not even like involved in it, you know? Something just like calling my mom or whatever it might be. It's huge. Anybody else? Yeah.
Something that I've been doing last year, and I want to continue doing it. Every time I get off the bus, I thank the bus driver. And I always, it's like a social experiment to see if the person behind me also says thank you.
Oh.
And like 99% of the time it works. I just think that
nice.
The common, like little things we're saying, please and thank you, can go along.
Beautiful. That's huge. And believe it or not, those are mitzvahs. If you want to take like the nice idea and then bring it into Torah also, it's mitzvahs. Why? Because it's Kiddush Hashem. Anybody know what Kiddush Hashem is? Sanctifying God's name. And what's that? The most amazing thing you can do, because there you are, as a Jew, making it known to the whole world, like how awesome you are. You're bringing God into the world by doing something as happy and as uplifting and saying thank you. And not only that, mitzvah gerus mitzvah means that one mitzvah causes another mitzvah to happen. So when you're saying thank you, another person says thank you, like, oh, I should say thank you. And now they have gratitude on their mind. You know, Rabbi Victor Miller would always talk about having gratitude on his mind all the time, about every little thing, down to an apple seed. So saying thank you, just two words, goes a very long way.
Makes you happier also.
100%.
One thing I work on, which I can't do, I don't do every time, but I try to do each time, is before I say something, there's a series of questions I'll ask myself quickly, but one is, what's the point of what I'm going to say? Because
mm-hmm.
if I'm just building my self-image or destroying someone else's, there's really no point in it.
Right.
Although sometimes if I'm destroying someone else's self-image, usually there's... And sometimes I'll say it, but like, I'm human. But like, building my self-image, sometimes if you're talking to the right person, it's okay. But
right.
not, you can't just say that to anyone.
Right. I think it's huge. One of the things you touched on is specifically just thinking before you speak. I mean, how often do we just shoot our mouths off? I'm guilty just like anybody else. How often do we just shoot our mouths off thinking like, oh, this is cool to say? Instead of just, who am I speaking to right now? Where did they come from? We meet people sometimes at like, you know, chapter 5 in their book of life. And we don't even know where they are. We don't know where they're holding. And then we just spout something off, you know? Sometimes when I say, oh, guess what? I just bought 5,800 million whatevers. And somebody's like, oh, now I feel small. You know? So too, by what you're saying. I think that's awesome. Yeah.
I started volunteering at like an organic market, and I'm going to try to give like genuine compliments to customers, because like a lot of them, it's like really close-knit community, so like they just start like talking to you, so maybe like in the middle of the conversation, I'll just give them a genuine compliment. It's once a week. So.
Nice. So once a week, so that's specific, great. Compliments are huge too. I mean, if they really go a long way. I'll never forget, there was this one time specifically where I had an awful day. Aside from being a lawyer, I also own a small business doing search engine optimization and online marketing for people. And one day I just had an awful day. And all it took was just my wife with a smile and a few nice words, and I'm just like uplifted again. Could have been a friend, could have been anybody, but believe it or not, a compliment, like I said over when with the spoken word poetry in the beginning of a minute, to like just explain, like, whoa, what a compliment can do, could build worlds. And it's not just like frou-frou, nice, fluffy ideas. You mamish build a world. Every Jew is a whole world. And slowly but surely, there we are, able to do something through a compliment. Right? Anyone else? Yeah.
Once a day, for every next week, I want to tell one of my friends how thankful I am to have this friend.
Nice. I like that a lot. There's a million different things. That's awesome. I should do that. I like that a lot. Because number one, it builds people. It makes them feel good about who they are. Number two, it helps you cultivate a curse of toe of gratitude through speaking. And it's a smart goal. Nice. So anybody else? Anybody else hold me? Yeah.
An hour of time, one day, one lunch, to talk with someone that I haven't spoken with in a while. That's like a friend I haven't spoken to.
Nice. What does that accomplish? I can think of a few things.
So, let them know that I'm still thinking about that even though, like, you know, it's been a long semester.
Beautiful. I think that's important because, like, when we're in college, you know, we can kind of get in our own little world by finals time and not really help other people, but it's always good to be thinking about, like, what can I do for other people, especially with my speech. Super vital. Yeah.
Quite often when someone asks you how you're doing, you're just saying, I'm just tired, when it could be a whole, it could be a thousands of different things that's wrong, but everyone just says I'm tired. People don't really speak their mind, so I think that it's important for the time frame, I don't know, for the next forever, I guess, really speak your mind and be honest with people and really address the elephant in the room. Speak your mind, and what that accomplishes is that I think it actually makes your relationship with that person you're talking to actually stronger.
I love that.
Because you're really saying the truth, even though it's hard and awkward to say it.
Beautiful. I love that a lot. There's a, reminds me of a story that I heard actually this past Shabbos about a rabbi, a very big rabbi. And he was a little acting. They just said goodnight to one of the yeshiva bachers, one of the young students who happened to be learning at the time. And he just said goodnight, and then he saw the guy again. He saw the student again. Out of nowhere, he says, goodnight. And the student said, you know, Rabbi, you just said goodnight to me. He said, but the first time I didn't really mean it. I didn't really think on it. What you're saying, I think, is if we think about the speech that we say, if we think, like, really, like, goodnight, or if we think really, like, you know, thank you, or you're welcome, like, let me just think about the words I'm actually saying instead of just having them flow out, that would be an amazing goal. Beautiful. Anybody else? Anyone else? Yeah, sure.
This isn't quite on the same topic as one of the others, but...
go for it.
Today, I've tried it before, but today I actually got, like... My secular friends, they didn't know this, but I got, a full-blown Talmudic discussion going on in my friend's apartment.
Whoa.
It was pretty awesome.
Nice.
I just brought up the cases, a couple cases that I remember from Israel, and they had opinions on them, and then they were getting frustrated, but then I think they started understanding the point of, like, just getting to understand how we all think.
Very
cool.
Very cool. So through words, you're able to bring out a discussion that's a holy discussion. Hopefully
yeah.
It was a good, peaceful, nice discussion. Everything.
Oh, yeah,
it was
peaceful.
But it's an amazing thing.
There's disagreements, for sure.
Which is okay, right?
Yeah.
You say, as long as there's a disagreement, that's the Shem Shemaim. It's totally fine, Perkei Avos tells us. But we don't want to be like Korach, which is for just arguing for no reason. We want to be like, you know, Hillel and Shammai. Very beautiful. Okay, so I don't want to keep you guys too long. I had one very big message I wanted to say, which is the power of speech. But sometimes you can hear it from, like, any perspective, right? But to hear it at Sinai, to hear it from Maimonides, like, to hear it from a Torah perspective, it's an amazing thing to realize that every time that you're saying thank you on the bus, every time that you're thinking, how am I going to use my words to uplift them, every time you say, I'm going to call my grandmother or my mother, every time that you're, you know, interacting in this world, we're walking, we're holy in God's world. And all these little things that I thought were just normal things are actually huge mitzvahs that we could do. And if every single time I just think to myself, how am I using my words, we can build the entire universe together and partner with God.